Don't you see how they have been deprived of that, and instead of man fearing them, they themselves fear man and avoid the abodes of people? They do not come out to search for food, but at night. They fear man submissively, otherwise they would attack man in his home and trouble his life. The dog, amongst the beasts, is endowed with a special loyalty to its master, his service and safeguard. It keeps watch during dark nights, roaming about the premises, safeguarding against burglars. It is ready to sacrifice its life to save its master, his properties, and his flocks. It becomes wholly accustomed to its master. It can put up with hunger and pain for its master's sake. Why has dog been created on this pattern? Except that it should serve to guard man with its strong teeth, stout claws, and frightening bark to frighten burglars and to prevent them from approaching the places that it watches and guards? Oh, Mufaddal, look at the faces of the quadrupeds, how they are shaped. You will see that they have their eyes accommodated in the front, lest they strike a wall or fall in a pit. You will find their mouths cleft under the snout. If they were like those of men, animals would not be able to pick up anything from the ground. Don't you see that man does not pick up his food with his mouth? He does so with his hands. This is a peculiar merit granted to man in comparison with other feeders. Since the quadrupeds do not possess such hands to enable them to pick up grass, the under part of the snout has been cleft to enable them to pick up grass and chew it. The mouth of quadrupeds is further helped with lengthened lips to reach out to farther as well as closer things. Consider the tails of animals and the benefit ordained therein. It is a sort of covering for their excretory privities. It also helps them ward off flies and mosquitoes that settle in the dirt on their bodies. Their tails are patterned after fans with which they drive away flies and mosquitoes. They also get relief from constantly wagging their tails. These animals stand on all fours. They have no occasion to move about and therefore feel relieved by wagging their tails. There are other benefits as well which human imagination is incapable of grasping, which are known only when the need arises. Among these benefits is that the tail is the handiest weapon to extricate when the dog gets stuck in the mud. The tail hair may also be of advantage to man. The trunk of such animals is made flat when lying on all four legs to facilitate riding and copulation because of the situation of the relevant parts. And if the private parts of the female quadrupeds were under their abdomens like those in woman, the males would not be able to copulate with them. Consider the trunk of an elephant and the great ingenuity in its pattern. With its trunk, it takes in food and water to the stomach like the human hand. Without it, the elephant cannot lift anything from the ground, since its neck is not long enough, which it may stretch forward like other quadrupeds. In the absence of a long neck, the elephant has been given a long trunk instead, that it may extend it and meet its need. Who has given it an organ to compensate for the absence of a missing one? Surely it is he who is so very compassionate to his creatures. And how can this take place by itself without wise design, as claimed by the perverse naturalists and atheists? If someone asks, why has it not been endowed with a neck similar to that of other animals? The reply is that the head and the ears of the elephant are very big and heavy, and if they were joined to a big neck, the elephant would suffer much and be easily disabled. Hence, its head has been joined directly to the body to protect it against that contingency, and instead thereof the proboscis has been constructed to serve all those purposes it needs, including those of feeding. Just consider the constitution of the giraffe and the distinct nature of its organs in that each organ is similar to that of other animals. Its head is like that of a horse, its neck is like that of a camel, its hooves are like those of a cow, and its skin is like that of a leopard. Some ignorant people have supposed that it results from the union of several kinds of animals. These ignoramuses say that the males of different species of land animals, when coming to the watering places, copulate with the females of other species, who then give such offspring that are a composite of different species. This is out of ignorance and the lack of gnosis of the Almighty Allah, glory be to Him. No animal enters into sexual union with animals of other species. No union takes place between a horse and a she-camel, or a camel and a cow. Sexual union can take place only between animals of similar constitutional shape. For example, between a horse and a she-ass that gives a mule or a wolf, with a hyena that gives a hybrid. Moreover, it never happens that the offspring of such a union can have an organ from this and another from that. A giraffe has one organ resembling that of a horse, another that of a camel, and hooves like those of a cow. But you see that a mule has its head, ears, back, tail, and hoof midway between those of a donkey and a horse. So is its cry midway between neighing and braying. This argument adequately shows that a giraffe is not the offspring of the union of disparate species, but is one wonder of the wonderful creations of the Almighty Allah, demonstrating His omnipotence. It should also be known that the Creator of the numberless species of animals creates the organs of whatsoever He likes. He adds to the creatures whatever He wills, and curtails whatever He wills. This is so that His omnipotence may be demonstrated, and that nothing can hinder Him in anything He wills. Why is the neck of the giraffe long, and what advantages are accrued to it thereof? The advantage lies in enabling it to reach up to the leaves and fruits of high trees, for it lives and grazes in places in dense forests of high trees. Just consider the creation of the monkey and the similarity between its organs and those of man, such as the head, the shoulders, the chest, and the internal organs. Moreover, it has been gifted with a brain and intellect, because of which it understands the signals and the directions of its master. It generally apes man's activities as it sees him. It is very close to man in its qualities, traits, and constitutional build. It should serve as a lesson to man that he should bear in mind that he is so closely like an animal, and if he had not been gifted with brain, intellect, and speech, he would have been just like the animals. There are certain additions in the constitution of a monkey that differentiate it from man, such as the mouth, the long tail, and the hair covering the whole body. These differences, however, would not hinder it from becoming human if it had been gifted with reason, intellect, and the faculties of speech like man. The real line of demarcation between it and man is due only to the faculties of reason, intellect, and speech. O Mufaddal, just consider the mercifulness of Almighty Allah toward these animals in giving their bodies different coverings of hair, wool, and fur to protect them against winter hardships. They have been gifted hoofs to protect them from the harms of badlands. They have neither hands, nor palms, nor fingers to spin and weave. Therefore, their clothing has been included as part of their bodily build to remain on them all their lives without renovation or change. Man, however, possesses hands and skill to work. He spins and weaves cloths for himself, and he changes his states with them. He receives many advantages from doing that. He becomes busy manufacturing his clothing and is thereby saved from harmful activities and idleness. He takes off his clothing whenever he wants and puts them on whenever he wants. He receives pleasure by putting on different kinds of beautiful dresses. He makes socks and shoes by way of fine industry to protect his feet. Laborers and traders thereby get their livelihood and the livelihood of their families. On the contrary, different kinds of hair, wool, and fur serve the animals as clothing while their hooves are as shoes for them. O Mufaddal, just consider the constitutional trait of the animals. They hide themselves when dying, just like people when they bury their dead. The carcasses of the beasts and animals are not seen. They are not so little to be overlooked. In fact, their numbers are greater than that of men.
Look at the flocks of deer, addaxes, zebras, ibexes, and stags, and also at other different species like lions, badgers, wolves, leopards, and others, and the many kinds of insects living inside the bowels of the earth and moving on its surface in the deserts and mountains, and birds like crows, partridges, ducks, cranes, pigeons, and birds of prey. None of their corpses do we see except the few that hunters get as game, or those that are devoured by beasts. As a matter of fact, when these animals feel that they are about to die, they hide themselves in some secret place and die there. Had it not been so, the earth would have been filled with carcasses and would have been infected by epidemics and all kinds of diseases. See the arts and lessons that man has learnt from these animals. The first example is that which has been mentioned by the Almighty Allah in the story of Adam's children when Cain had murdered Abel. Cain saw two crows fighting, one killing the other and then burying the carcass of the killed one, wherefrom Cain learnt to dig and conceal his brother's corpse. These animals have been given this instinct to save man from the affliction of those troubles and epidemics which would result later on. O Mufaddal, consider the wits with which animals have been naturally gifted by Allah the Almighty through His infinite mercy, so as not to leave any creature deprived of His compassion. The stag eats snakes, but it does not drink water, however thirsty it becomes, fearing that the poison may spread in its body because of water, which may kill him. It roams about water springs and cries because of thirst, but does not drink water, for it dies soon. You see the great restraint that these animals have before the intense thirst because of the fear of harm to an extent that a rational wise man would have been unable to undertake. When the fox does not find food, it feigns death with its belly inflated to deceive birds into thinking it is dead. As soon as birds come around it to eat from the dead body, it attacks and catches them. Who has given this skill to the speechless, irrational fox? Surely he who has taken upon himself the responsibility of feeding it. As the fox cannot undertake those activities, like attacking its prey, which other beasts can, it has been gifted with skill and fraud as a means of livelihood. The dolphin hunts birds. It catches a fish, kills it that it may remain floating on the water while it hides itself underneath water, stirring the water all the time to keep its own body hidden. As soon as a bird pounces upon the fish, the dolphin attacks and takes hold of the bird. By this skill, it gets its victim. Al-Mufaddal said, "My master, would you please tell me about the python and the cloud?" Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, "The cloud snatches a python wherever it may find it, just as the magnet stone snatches a piece of iron. A python does not raise its head from the earth due to fear of the cloud, except in the summertime when the sky is cleared without a trace of cloud. Mufaddal asked why the cloud had been made to overlord over the python and take it wherever it may find it, and Imam Sadiq a.s. said, to save men from its harms. Mufaddal said, "Sir, you have told me much about the animal kingdom so fully as to serve as a lesson to everyone. Would you please tell me about ants and birds?" Imam Sadiq a.s. said, "O Mufaddal, look at the weak little ant. Do you find any deficiency therein affecting its benefit? Where has this propriety and measure come from? It is the same ingenuity and design which has gone into the build of all creatures, whether big or small. Just see how these ants gather together to garner food for themselves. You will find that when several ants want to carry a grain to their home, they resemble several men carrying food or other things. Ants, in fact, are so serious and active to an extent that even men are not. Do you not see how they help each other in carrying food as people do? They break the grains into pieces, lest they would sprout and become useless to them. When the grains become moist, they take them out and spread them so that they can dry. Ants burrow their holes at elevated places away from the danger of flooding. All these activities are not out of reason, but instinct with which their constitutions are endowed by the kindness of Almighty Allah. Consider the insect called laith, which is called the lion of the flies by the public. It has been granted skill, ingenuity, and mildness to secure its livelihood. You will see that when it feels a fly approaching it, it feigns ignoring it for a while as if it is a lifeless body. When it feels that the fly feels safe and becomes ignorant of its presence, it begins moving slowly, step by step, till it gets near enough to catch it, and then pounces upon it and captures it. Getting it, it embraces it with its whole body to prevent its escape. It holds on till it feels that the fly has become weak and relaxed, and then it begins to eat it, and in this way it survives. The ordinary spider weaves its web and uses it as a trap to catch flies. It sits hidden within it. As soon as a fly is trapped, it pounces upon it, stinging it time after time. The hunting of the lion of the flies is like the hunting of dogs and cheetahs, while the hunting of spiders is like that of nets and traps. Just see how this weak insect has been gifted with the instinct to catch its prey, which man cannot do without using artifice and implements. Do not despise anything, for in everything can be found a clear lesson, like ants and other creatures. A fine meaning may be found in an insignificant thing without depreciating its value, just as gold is not depreciated when weighed against iron weights. O Mufaddal, consider the structure of birds. When it has been ordained to fly high in the air, it has been gifted with a light body and a comparatively compact constitution. It has only 2 feet instead of 4, forced fingers instead of 5, and only 1 orifice for excretion instead of 2. It has been gifted a sharp chest to cut through the air just as a boat is built to cut through water. It has long, stiff feathers on its sides and a tail to help it fly high. The whole body is covered with feathers that can get filled with air for high flights. Since it has been ordained that its food will be grains and flesh, that it will swallow without mastication, it has not been given teeth, and a stiff beak has been given to it instead. The beak is not injured in picking up nor broken by nibbling flesh. Since it has no teeth and it swallows grains and raw flesh, the food is ground by the means of the heat that is inside its innards, which makes it in no need of mastication. It is just an example that the seeds of grapes pass out of a man's stomach intact while they are completely ground in the bird's innards. Birds have been created to lay eggs rather than to give birth to young ones, so that they may not become heavy and unable to fly. If the fetuses were to stay inside the innards of birds until they were fully developed, birds would not have been able to rise or fly. Everything in its build has been created so as to be fully appropriate to its situation and life. It has also been ordained that birds which have to fly in the air should sit for a week, 2 or 3, on the eggs until the chicks hatch out of the eggs. They then blow air into the crops of the chicks so that the crops become wide enough to receive food with which it can subsist. Who has ordered birds to pick up grains and foods and then take that food out of their crops to put it into the crops of the young ones? Why do birds bear all that burden, although they have no faculty of reasoning, nor do they have any expectations from their chicks, like the expectations of man from his offspring to bring him honor and support and keep his name alive? This is an activity which demonstrates that it is a special boon from Almighty Allah, which the bird itself does not know nor can figure out. It is an arrangement for the survival of the race. Look at the hen. How anxious it is to lay the eggs and to bring forth the chicks, although it has neither any particular nest nor have the eggs been gathered. It clucks, spreads its feathers, and gives up its nourishment, unless it is given eggs to sit on and to bring forth the chicks. Why is that? It is to preserve the race. Had it not been instinctively ordained, who could have obliged it to preserve the race, while it has no intellectual or reasoning faculty? Ponder on the creation of the egg and the white and yellow matters in it. One part is for the chick to be constituted, while the other is to serve it as its nourishment till the time when it leaves the egg. Just see the ingenuity underlying it. Since the rise of the chick is to be carried on safely in the shell that nothing can enter from outside, its nourishment is provided within it, which is sufficient until it comes out, like one who is imprisoned in a closed prison and provided with enough food to suffice him till his release. Just consider the bird's crop and the ingenuity underlying it. The way of food to the gizzard is narrow and allows food to reach it only in small quantities. Without the crop, the grain would take time to reach the gizzard. The bird, out of care and fear, fills up its crop hastily. Its crop is constructed as a haversack suspended in front of it, so that it may fill it up hastily with whatever it gets, and then slowly transfer it to the stomach. There is another advantage in the crop. Certain birds have to transfer food material to their young ones. The crop helps them to transfer it easily from a nearby place. Al-Mufaddal said, "Some people of the materialistic school claim that the variegated hues and shapes of birds are merely due to the compounding of elements and humors in varied proportions. They are out of disturbance and indifference." Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, "This ornamentation which you see in the peacock or the partridge, and the perfect symmetry as if some artist with a fine brush has accomplished the art of picturesqueness, how can irrational compounding bring it forth without any flaw? If these artistic models have come into being without planning, they would be imperfect and full of differences and faults. Just consider the feathers of birds. You will find them like cloth woven with fine strings. One hair is interwoven with another just as one piece of thread is interwoven with another. Look at its composition. If you open it, it opens without being split, to allow air to be filled in and to allow the bird to fly when it likes. In the middle of the feather you will find a stout stick covered with hair-like material. The stick is hollow so as to not be a burden to the bird and hinder its flight. Have you ever seen the long-legged bird and ever thought of the advantage in the long legs it has? It is often found in shallow water. You will find it standing on its long legs as though it were keeping watch at a watchtower. It keeps watching the movements in the water. When it finds anything edible, it slowly moves towards it and catches it. If its legs were shorter, its belly would touch the water in its movements towards its victim, and it might then swell and fail to catch its victim. It has therefore been gifted with two long props to fulfill its need without any obstacle. Consider the creation of birds. You will find that every long-legged bird has a long neck as well to enable it to pick up its food from the ground. If a bird had long legs but a short neck, it would not be able to pick up anything from the ground. A long-legged bird, besides its long neck, might have a long beak so that it would be easier for it to get its food. Do you not see that anything you consider in the creation you will find exact, perfect, and out of utmost wisdom? Look at sparrows and how they seek their food during the day. They do not miss it, nor do they find it collected in one place, but they get it through continuously moving and searching about here and there. Thus it is with all the creatures. Glory be to Allah the Almighty, who has apportioned sustenance and arranged it in different ways to be obtained. It has not been placed out of reach when the creatures need it, nor has it been made to be obtained so easily without any efforts. There would be no use if subsistence were ready and at hand, because animals would not leave it until they had become oversatiated, and that would lead to indigestion and perishment. People also would be so reckless and careless until corruption and vices would spread everywhere. Do you know about the food of the birds that do not come out except at night like owls and bats?" Al-Mufaddal said, "I do not know." Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, "The food of such creatures consists of varied kinds of insects scattered in the atmosphere, such as mosquitoes, butterflies, locusts, and the like. Such creatures are scattered everywhere, and no place is free from them. When you light up a lamp at night on the roof or in the yard, many kinds of such insects will gather round it. Where do they come from? Surely from near about they come. If anyone says that they come from the forests and deserts, he will then be asked how they can reach so near so soon, and how can they see the lamp lit inside the building surrounded by many other buildings, while as a matter of fact they take no time to gather around the lamp. It is clear that these creatures are spread everywhere in the atmosphere, and the birds that come out at night feed on them. See how nourishment has been arranged for the birds that come out at night by means of such insects scattered in the atmosphere. Try to understand the purpose of the creation of such living creatures, lest someone may think that they are created in vain without any advantage. The bat has been created in a strange shape between birds and quadrupeds. In fact, it is nearer to quadrupeds with its two protruding ears, teeth, and fine hair. It bears and gives birth to its young ones. It suckles its children. It urinates and excretes. It walks on all fours when walking. All these traits are contrary to those of birds. It comes out only at night and feeds on insects scurrying in the air. Some say it does not eat anything but lives only on cool air as nourishment. This is incorrect for two reasons. It urinates and excretes, which presuppose solid food. It has teeth, and if it did not eat, the teeth would be useless, whereas there is nothing in creation that is useless. This creature has well-known merits. Its excreta are useful in certain cases. Its strange constitution is in itself a wonder that shows the infinite powers of Allah the Almighty, who does whatsoever He wills for the benefit of His people, and that He is more aware. The weaver bird builds its nest on the trees. Sometimes a big snake comes towards its nest, opening its mouth to devour it. The weaver bird gets worried and looks about for a means of safety. When it finds a thorny seed, it picks it up and throws it into the open mouth of the snake. The snake begins writhing until it dies. If I had not told you of this, could you have imagined that a thorny seed could have such benefits, or could anyone think that a bird, big or small, could hit upon such a plan? You may learn a lesson from this. There are many things with unknown benefits which may not be known except through an event or news to be told. Consider the bees and their concerted efforts to produce honey and build the hexagonal hives, and consider the subtleties of the skill that subsists therein. When you consider the work, you will find it extremely wonderful and subtle, and when you consider the result of the work, you will find it magnificent and great among people. And when you look at the artisan, you will find it completely devoid of intelligence and ignorant of itself besides other things. There is a clear evidence in this that the exactitude and skill and ingenuity comes not from the bee, but rather from the omnipotence of Him who has created the bee in such a pattern and subjected it to the benefit of man. Look at the locust, how weak yet how strong they are. If you ponder on the creation of a locust, you will find it as one of the weakest creatures. Yet no one can protect his village against a swarm of locusts if they invade. Don't you see that if any of the monarchs of the world came out with all his armies to fight the locusts, he would not succeed? Is this not an evidence showing the omnipotence of Allah the Almighty, that the strongest of his creatures should be unable to withstand the attack of the weakest of his creatures? See how locusts flow over the earth like a flood, covering mountains, deserts, and plains, and they may even hide the light of the sun because of their great numbers. If this is done by hand, contemplate when such huge numbers would ever gather, and how many years would be required for that. It is another evidence of the omnipotence of Allah the Almighty, to which nothing can ever aspire. Consider the creation of the fish and its compliance to the environment in which it has been created to lead its life. It has no legs, for it does not need to walk. It has no lungs, as it cannot breathe under water. Instead of legs, it has been endowed with stout fins, with which it strikes water on both sides, just as a boatman strikes water on both sides of the boat with his oars. Its body has been covered with thick scales interlocked with each other like a coat of mail to protect itself against plagues. It has a penetrating faculty of smell as compensation for its weak eyesight blurred by water. It smells its food from a distance and heads for it. Otherwise, how could it find its food and where it is? Know, too, that it has orifices from the mouth to the ears through which water passes and gives it the same recreative breathing as other animals breathing fresh air. Now consider its reproductive characteristics. The number of eggs inside a fish is beyond computation. It is to increase the food for other living beings, for most of them live on fish. Even beasts lie in wait for fish at the banks of water pools. As soon as a fish passes by, a beast pounces upon it. Since beasts, birds, people, and even other kinds of fish feed on fish, Allah has made it so in great numbers. If you want to recognize the vast wisdom of the Creator and the limited knowledge of the creatures, look at the different kinds of fishes, shells, and other numberless aquatic creatures. Many of their merits are not known, so that man may come to know them, one after the other, through opportunities that may arise. As an example, the cochineal was found by man through, as it is stated, a dog roaming on the seashore, having found and eaten a snail. Its mouth got colored. People admired the color and began using the cochineal. There are many other things that people come to know after some time and by chance sometimes. Al-Mufaddal said, "It was noon. My master got up for the prayers, asking me to come to him early the next morning. I came back so pleased with the knowledge he had taught me and thanked Allah for what he had given me. I spent the night very pleasantly." Al-Mufaddal said, "On the third day I went early in the morning to my master Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. I was permitted to come in and to have a seat. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, 'Praise be to Allah who has favored us and not favored others over us. He has favored us with His knowledge and supported us with His patience. Whoever turns away from us will be in hell, and whoever shades himself with the shadow of our lofty tree will be in paradise.
O Mufaddal, I have explained to you in detail about the creation of man and the subtle design of Almighty Allah and the lessons to be learnt from the modifications of circumstances. I have also told you about the animal kingdom. Now I will talk about the sky, the sun, the moon, the stars, the orbits, the day and night, hot and cold, the wind, the four fundamentals, the rain, rocks, mountains, mud, stones, minerals, date palms, the plant kingdom, and the signs and lessons therein. Look at the color of the sky and the perfect design in that. This particular color is the most appropriate and tonic for the eyesight compared to all other colors. Physicians ask one whose eyes suffer from some illness to gaze frequently at greenery or at some other darker hue. Some skillful physicians ask one whose sight is weak to gaze in a green basin full of water. See how Allah the Almighty has created the sky with a green color that is near dark so as to not harm the eyes that look often at the sky. That which people have perceived through reason, discernment, and experimentation is found clearly in the creation as an extreme wisdom, so that the people of understanding may take a lesson and the atheists, may Allah destroy them, may reflect. O Mufaddal, consider the rising and the setting of the sun to make the day and the night. Without the sunshine, all the affairs of the world would be futile. People would not be able to earn their livings or conduct their affairs while the world was dark over them. They would not be happy in their lives without the pleasure and spirit of light. The benefits of the sunshine are obvious and do not need to be expatiated. Consider the benefits of the sunset. If the sun did not set, people would have no rest or comfort, though their need for rest and comfort is absolutely essential for the calmness of their bodies and the relaxation of their senses, besides the facilitation of an easy digestion and the transport of energy to the organs. And if night did not come, greed would cause people to continue working to gather more wealth, and that would harm their bodies and health. The perpetual sunshine heats the earth and all the animals and plants on it. Allah the Almighty has, therefore, ordained with His wisdom that the sun should shine for a period and set for a period, like a lamp that is lit for some time, so that a household can carry out their needs and is then extinguished for some time, so that they can rest and calm down. Light and darkness are opposite to each other, and yet both are made subservient to the interests of the world's betterment and amelioration. Then think of the states of the sun that make the four seasons of the year and the wisdom and advantages therein. In the winter, heat comes back to the trees and plants, and the materials for fruits are formed. Air is condensed to make clouds and rains. The bodies of animals grow and become stronger. In the spring, the materials that have been formed in the winter appear and plants grow and bloom. Animals become excited and ready for copulation. In the summer, the air becomes hot and fruits ripen. The waste matters of bodies dissolve, and the surface of the earth becomes dry and ready now for building and for other works. In the autumn, the air is fresh, diseases disappear, bodies are healthy, the night is long that it can be fit for some certain works due to its length, and the weather is nice for other advantages that to mention will take a lot of time. Now consider the motion of the sun through the 12 zodiacs to complete a year and the wisdom underlying it. This is the period that comprises the four seasons, winter, spring, summer, and autumn. Grains and fruits ripen during this annual movement of the sun to meet human needs. This cycle of development goes on continually. Do you not see that a year is the period of the movement of the sun from the Aries to the Aries? With a year and its components, time has been measured since ancient times and throughout all ages. People calculate thereby the periods of lifespans, loans, contracts, and other business matters. It is with the movement of the sun that a year is completed and a correct estimate of time established. See how the sun sheds its light over the world and with what ingenuity this is. If it shone constantly only at one spot in the sky, its rays would not reach many other directions. It has, therefore, been so planned that it rises in the east and moves on constantly spreading its light from side to side till it reaches the west, so that no place remains without having taken its share of advantage. If the sun were late for a year or a part of a year, how then would the state of people be? In fact, how could they survive? Can you imagine what great, terrible problems people would face that they would have no way of changing? Therefore, the sun has been ordained to persist in its motions without a bit of delay for the survival and betterment of the world. Consider the moon, for it has a good sign that the public uses to identify the months. A year is not calculated according to the motion of the moon, because its motion does not comprehend the changes of seasons or the times of the growing and ripening crops and fruits. So lunar months and years are different from solar months and years. A lunar month varies in that sometimes it comes in the winter and sometimes in the summer. Consider why the moon shines at night and the ingenuity underlying it. In spite of the need of darkness for the rest and tranquility of animals and cool air for plants, complete absence of light and total darkness would not have any merit. There would be no possibility for work, though people may sometimes need to work at night due to the short time for some works during the day or due to the extreme heat of the day. Yet, man is able to do many things under the light of the moon. The moonlight helps people work for their livelihood whenever they are so disposed. The wayfarers find fascination in their travels. The moon has been ordained to appear in some nights and disappear in others. The moonlight is less luminous than the sunlight, lest people continue working in the same way as they do during the day without getting rest even unto perishment. In the different phases of the moon, there are particular indications that all these changes have been ordained for the benefit of the universe by the Almighty Creator and as lessons to the people of understanding. O Mufaddal, consider the stars and their different movements. Some of them do not budge from the positions appointed for them. Some move together in groups. Some others move from zone to zone and have their distinct velocities. Each one of them has two movements. One is general due to the cosmic motion towards the west, and the other is special concerning itself toward the east. It is like an ant moving on a corn. The corn moves to the right and the ant to the left. The ant has two different movements, one from its own accord in a forward direction and the other inevitably with the corn backward. Now, ask those who claim that the stars have come into existence by themselves without a creator or any planning, what has prevented them all from being still or whether or not they all move? Carelessness would imply one movement, so how can it give two different movements with accurate accounts? There is an evidence in this showing that the stars and their movements have been created after absolute planning and wisdom, and not by carelessness, as the atheists claim. If someone asks, why are some stars stationary while others are moving? We say, if all were moving, the evidences of the movements of the moving ones would be null. Many a secret is known after the movements of the sun and other stars because of their movements in their respective orbits. If all were moving, there would be no certain signs or marks to know their ways of movements, and besides that, people on the earth would be unable to find their ways by following the stars, and so the stars would be useless and in vain, and one could say that they had been created by themselves or out of carelessness. In their different movements and positions, there is a clear evidence showing that they have been created by a wise creator and out of utmost wisdom and planning. Consider the stars that appear at certain times of the year and disappear at others, like the Pleiades, the Orion, the Sirius, and the Canopus. If all of them appeared simultaneously, none could stand as a distinct mark for people to recognize and obtain guidance. Rather, people deduce from the appearance and disappearance of the Orion and the Taurus. The appearance and disappearance of each at appropriate occasions was ordained for the benefit of people. The Pleiades and others have been ordained to appear and disappear at different times for particular benefits of people. In the same way, the constellation of the Bear has been ordained to appear all the time for the certain advantage that it is as a signpost for people to find their ways through the unknown paths in the land and the sea. As the stars of this constellation are always apparent, people look at them immediately when they need to find the path they want. Both these matters, though opposite, serve man's benefits, in addition to other signs that lead to knowing the times for many works and activities like planting, traveling in the land and the sea, and other things like raining, blowing of the winds, and the times of hot and cold. Moreover, people find their ways with the aid of the stars in their travels through dreadful deserts and fearful seas in the darkness of night. Besides all this, the stars, in their comings and goings, risings and settings, have many lessons for those who have understanding minds. If the sun, moon, and stars were near enough for us to see their very fast movements, would they not dazzle the eyes by their glowing and radiation, just as that which happens sometimes when the lightning lingers in the sky? If some people were in a dome having several lamps that were rotating fast around them, their eyes would be dazzled until they would fall to the ground. See how it has been ordained for the stars to move with their high speeds at huge distances away from us to protect our eyesight against damage and harms, while retaining their tremendous speed so that their movements are not disturbed. It has been ordained for a little light to come from the stars in order to not leave the earth completely dark when there is no moon. People sometimes need to journey at night, and it would be difficult for them to follow their ways when there is no light at all to guide them. Consider the kindness and wisdom ordained in this creation. Darkness is also needed, but a little light has been made through it for the benefits of which we have talked. Think about the universe with its sun, moon, stars, and zodiacs, which revolve perpetually over the world in an accurate account through the alternation of the day and the night, and the four seasons to bring about numerous benefits to the earth and its people, animals, and plants. Is it not clear to anyone with a discerning mind that this is a creation of a wise creator? If someone says that mere chance has brought this about, then why does he not say the same thing about a water wheel rotating to water a garden with trees and plants? Does he deny saying that this small water wheel, which is made of wood and with a simple skill, has not been made by a maker? If not, then how can he say this about the great wheel that has been made due to wisdom, the like of which human minds fall far short? If this universe became damaged, like the tools that people use in their industries, would the human beings have any means of repairing it? O Mufaddal, consider the lengths of the day and night and how they are adjusted for the benefit of the creation. Neither the day nor the night exceeds 15 hours. If the day were 100 or 200 hours, do you not see that the earth with its animals and plants would perish? The quadrupeds would not stop grazing as long as there was daylight, and man would not stop working and acting, and this would make them all perish. The plants would dry up and burn under the heat of the day and the glow of the sun. Similarly, if the night were prolonged, all species of living beings would be prevented from moving about to get their foods until they would die of hunger. Plants would lose their vital heat until they would decay and perish, just as what you see in the plants that are in a place where the sun shines much. Consider the hot and cold and how they alternate in the world, increasing, decreasing, and moderating, to make the four seasons of the year and the benefits the creatures get thereby. Moreover, the physical bodies become improved and renovated thereby. This leads to their health and longevity. Otherwise, the creatures suffer from decadence, disintegration, and emaciation. Think of how they, hot and cold, replace each other gradually and slowly. You will notice that one decreases gradually, giving place gradually to the corresponding increase of the other. If one of them were to suddenly erupt the other, it would lead to serious damages and illnesses, just as when one comes from a hot bath immediately to a cold place. The Almighty Allah has ordained the gradual change of heat and cold to protect man from the damages and harms of sudden changes. If someone claims that this graduality and slowness in the advent of heat and cold results from the slowness of the sun and its movement, he may be asked about the reason behind the movement of the sun and its gradual inclination. If he answers that it is due to the great distance between the east and the west, he may be asked why it is so disposed. The question on this line will continue to be repeated till he is obliged to admit the necessity of omnipotence, purposefulness, and wise planning. Without heat, the hard, bitter fruits would not ripen into succulent and sweet ones. Without cold, plants would not grow their buds and would not bear their abundant fruits. Do you not see the benefits of the heat and cold which, with all their merits, are sources of trouble to the bodies as well? There is a lesson for those who ponder and a proof that all this has been ordained by the wise Creator for the goodness of the world. O Mufaddal, let me inform you of the blessings of the wind. Do you not see that when it stops blowing and is stagnant, distress comes and is about to do away with the souls? Healthy persons feel ill, the sick get worse, fruits get spoiled, legumes get decayed, epidemics spread among people, and animals and plagues in the plants. This proves that the blowing of the wind has been ordained by the wise Lord for the good of the creatures. I will tell you about another aspect of the air. Sound is produced by the impact of two bodies, and the air takes it to the ears. People talk day and night on their needs and daily affairs. If speech were to remain in the air as writing remains on paper, the world would be filled with it, and people would suffer much and be disturbed and troubled, and they would need to refresh and replace it with other much more than their need to refresh their books and writings, because that which is spoken is much more than that which is written. The Almighty Creator has made the air as a hidden paper that retains the speech just for the required time until the people achieve their need of it, and then it is erased, and this hidden paper gets refreshed again to carry other speeches again and again forever. The air has great benefits for everything on the earth. It is the life of these bodies and their guard from inside through that which is breathed from outside that keeps the spirit alive. The air drives the sounds away and carries smells from one place to another. Do you not see how the air wafts different kinds of scents to your nose? The same is said about sounds. This same air is the carrier of heat and cold, which alternate regularly for the benefit of the world. The blowing wind is from the air that relieves people when blowing and carries clouds from one place to another, so that all may receive their benefits until they are condensed to rain. The wind pollinates the trees and plants, pushes ships to move, softens food, cools water, inflames fire, dries up wet things, and, in general, it enlivens everything on the earth. Without this blowing air, vegetation would dry up, animals would die, and things would be heated and corrupted. O Mufaddal, consider the four elements created by Allah the Almighty to adequately fulfill the purpose of their creation, namely earth, water, air, and fire. Among them is this earth and its expanse. If it were not so vast, how then would it suffice for the human needs of housing, agriculture, meadows, forests, jungles, precious herbs of medicine, and valuable minerals?
Someone may dispute the existence of empty, desolate deserts and ask what benefits lie in them. It is said to him that these lands are the abodes of beasts and their pastures. Besides, they are as a breather for people if they need to replace their homelands. Many desolate lands have been changed into palaces and gardens when people move to live in them. If the earth were not so vast, people would find themselves as prisoners in narrow, walled places, and they would not be able to leave their homes, even if pressed by circumstances. Think of the creation of the earth in that it is so finely balanced so as to be a fit habitat for all things. People are able to move about on the earth and carry out their needs and living affairs, sit on it to get rest and comfort, sleep on it quietly and tranquilly, and conduct their businesses easily. If the earth were flickering and upset, it would be impossible for people to erect buildings or carry out trades and industries, and they would not live happily with the ground flickering under them. Think of the earthquakes that last only for a short while, and yet people leave their homes and flee in every direction. If someone asks, why does the earth quake, it is said to him that earthquakes and the likes are as lessons and warnings for people to refrain from sins and vices. The calamities afflicting them and their properties have the same purpose, leading to their advantage and betterment in this life and, if they are virtuous, a reward and compensation in the hereafter incomparable to all that is in the earth. It sometimes happens that there is an immediate reward in this world, if such reward is in the interest of people generally or individually. The earth in its nature that Allah has created is cool and dry, and so is the stone, but the stone is relatively harder than the earth. If the earth were hard like the stone, could it produce any vegetation on which human and animal life depend? Would plowing and planting be possible? Do you not see that it is more flexible than the stone? It has been made pliable and soft to be fit for all man's services. Allah the Almighty has ordained the earth to be in a gradual slope from the north to the south. Allah has made the earth like this to allow water to flow on its surface and, after irrigating the lands, to flow into the sea, just as a roof is made sloping from one side to another to prevent water from gathering in one place. The earth has been made so for the same reason. If it were not so, the whole earth would be swamped with water, and this would trouble people and block their ways and paths. If water were not so abundant in flowing through springs, valleys, and rivers, it would fail to suffice the needs of men, animals, and plants. A shortage of water would affect all kinds of beasts, birds, and fishes, and all aquatic living creatures as well. Besides, it has other benefits of which you are aware, yet ignorant of their great value and merit. Water is the source of life for inanimate creatures and plants. It may be mixed with different drinks to be delicious to drinkers. With water, bodies and other things are cleansed of dirt. Soil is dampened with water to make it fit for different works. With water, fire is extinguished when it flares up and people face dangers. Exhausted people refresh themselves by bathing with water, and there are many other benefits that are known only at the time of need. If you have any doubts about the benefit of abundant water in the seas, you should know that it is the abode of many different kinds of fishes and aquatic creatures. It is a treasure house of pearls, rubies, ambergris, and various other kinds of precious materials that are extracted from under the seas. At seashores, there are different plants that provide good perfumes and herbs for drugs. Furthermore, water is a means of travel and trade between distant countries such as Iraq and China. If these long-distance trades had no means except to be carried on backs, they would become corrupted and remain in their countries and in their keepers' hands because the cost of carrying them would be much more than their actual prices. Therefore, no one would venture to carry them, and this would lead to the waste of many necessities people require and would end the living of those who carry them and live by means of them. Likewise, if the air were not so abundant and vast, people and other creatures would suffocate because of the smoke and vapors that would congest in it. If fire were spread like water and air, it would burn the world and all that it had. Rather, it has been stored in things so as to be obtained only when needed. It is preserved with fuels and firewood as long as it is needed. It does not require fuels to burn, for it does not cost much, nor does it appear everywhere, for it would burn everything. It has been created in accurate consideration so that people may make use of its benefits and avoid its harms. It has another characteristic. It has been assigned only for the benefit of men. Animals have no need of fire, nor do they enjoy it. Man would suffer much in his living if there were no fire. Since Allah the Almighty has ordained it to be so, man has been endowed with palms and fingers to enable him to light up the fire and make use of it, while the animals have not been gifted with these abilities. However, animals have been gifted with patience for the difficult lives they lead, so that they would not be at a loss as man would be when there was no fire. I will tell you about one of the benefits of fire and a little thing whose importance is so great. It is the lamp that people use to satisfy their needs in the night. Without it, people would spend their lives as if they were in graves. How could one read, write, weave, or do many other things in the darkness of the night without the light of fire? What would be the state of one who is afflicted with a harm or illness at night when he needs a surgical treatment or bandage? The benefits of fire in cooking, warming the body, drying the moist substances, dissolving hard materials, and many other things cannot be counted. Al-Mufaddal. Consider the clear weather and the rainfall, and their alternating in the world and the goodness they have. If one of them continues, it causes harms to the world. Do you not see that when rain falls for prolonged times, legumes and vegetables decay, animals become slack, the air becomes clammy and causes many diseases, and the roads and streets are damaged? When the sky remains clear for prolonged times, the earth becomes dried up, plants wither, the waters of springs and rivers decrease, which causes harms to animals and plants, the air becomes dry, and other kinds of diseases occur. When they alternate thus regularly, the climate becomes moderate, and each of them improves the demerits of the other, and everything goes right. If someone asks, "Why has it not been ordained that no harm should be in any of that at all?" it ought to be said to him that it is so in order to make man suffer somehow, and feel some pain to encourage him to refrain from sins. As when man's body suffers from some illness and needs bitter drugs to recover and restore soundness, man, likewise, when he transgresses and exceeds the limits, needs what pained him and makes him suffer, so that he may refrain from his faults and turn back to the right path of goodness and guidance. If a monarch bestows great amounts of gold and silver on his people, will not his munificence impress their minds with reverence and admiration, and will not his mention be raised everywhere? Can one rainfall which falls on a country and brings with it goodness and blessings that are more than all of the gold and silver of all countries be compared to the gold and silver of that monarch? Do you not see what a great blessing this little rain is for people? Yet people are heedless thereof. It may happen that someone's needs or works are disturbed due to rainfall, and then he becomes angry and discontented, preferring the trivial benefit to the great one that is better for his end. It is because of his ignorance of the lofty boons therein. Consider the falling of the rain on the earth and the wise ordainment in it. It has been ordained to pour from high up in order to include all high places and irrigate them. If the rain were to fall from a certain side or angle, it would not include the high places, and so the lands there could not be cultivated. Do you not see that the lands that are irrigated artificially are less than those irrigated by rains? It is so because the rains cover all the earth, and the vast lands and the feet of mountains may be cultivated to provide many crops. By the fall of rains, people are relieved from the trouble of carrying water from one place to another, and from the quarrels happening amongst them over the sources of water, until the strong people of influence aggressively obsess the source of water and deprive the weak of it. Then, since rainwater has been ordained to fall onto the earth, it has been made into drops, showering to penetrate into the earth and irrigate it. If it poured, it would flow on the surface of the earth and would not penetrate into it. Besides that, it would destroy the plants. Therefore, rains have been ordained to fall in mild showers to enliven the earth and make seeds and plants grow. There are other blessings in rainfall. It tempers the bodies, purifies the air, removes pollutions and epidemics, and cleans the plants from mildews and the like, besides many other benefits. If someone asks, does rain not cause heavy damage in some years when it falls in intense quantities, or hails which destroy the fruitful plants and cause much humidity in the air, that in turn causes many diseases against man and plants? In response, it is said that this damage is sometimes needed to reform man and make him refrain from sins and vices, and then the benefit he receives in his religion is more important than the damage he receives in his properties. O Mufaddal, look at these mountains formed of earth and stone, which the ignorant consider useless and unnecessary, whereas they have many advantages. From among these advantages is that snow falls on the heights of mountains and remains there till the time of need. When snow melts, it makes springs and rivers flow with water, and makes different kinds of trees and herbs grow that do not grow in plains and other places. Mountains have caves and holes for beasts. Mountains are used as strong forts against enemies. From mountains, rocks are cut and taken for buildings and quarries. They contain mines of precious stones and different minerals, besides many other advantages that no one knows save the knower, the wise. O Mufaddal, think of the different kinds of minerals and precious stones that are extracted from the mines in the mountains, such as plaster, lime, gypsum, arsenic, zinc, mercury, copper, tin, silver, gold, aquamarine, beryl, and various other kinds of rocks, besides tar, sulfur, petroleum, and others that people use to meet their needs. Is it unclear to anyone with reason that all these treasures have been laid in the earth for man to take out and with them satisfy his needs? People, in spite of their greed, have failed to discover all these treasures. If they could, with all the knowledge they have, do that, definitely gold and silver would appear and spread everywhere in the world, and then they would lose their real value before people and would be of no use in buying, selling, or other dealings. Rulers would not gather wealth, and people would not save any for their heirs.
Nevertheless, people have been given the knowledge to make brass from copper, glass from sand, silver from lead, and gold from silver, and the like that have no harm. Just see how they have been given the knowledge of that which has no harm, and have not been given the knowledge of that which would harm them if they had it. If someone enters into mines, he arrives at a great valley flowing with abundant water, the bottom of which no one can reach or cross, and after it there are near mountains of silver. Now think of the wisdom of the wise Creator in His creation. He has intended to show His people His omniscience and vast treasures, so that they might know that if Allah had willed to give them as much silver as there are mountains, He would do so. But there would be no good to them in that, because this precious mineral would lose its real value before people, and then it would not benefit them. Rare things are precious and dear, but when they are available in abundant quantities and everyone can attain them, they no longer remain precious or dear, because things are dear due to their rarity. O Mufaddal, consider the plants and the many advantages they provide. Fruits are for food, hay is fodder for animals, firewood is fuel, wood is used for carpentry, and the bark, leaves, roots, and gums also have many other uses. Think if fruits were to be found accumulated on the ground and not growing on the branches which bear them, what a disruption there would be in our living. Nutrition would be available, no doubt, but what about the valuable benefits of wood, firewood, and all the other things mentioned above? This is besides the pleasure one feels when looking at the beautiful scenes of plants and fruitful trees that are incomparable with any other scene in the world. O Mufaddal, think of the revenue that has been placed in plants, how one seed produces 100 seeds or more or less. One seed should produce one seed, but why has it not been ordained to be so? Seeds and plants give multiple revenues because farmers need some to sow in their farms and some others to feed on until their plants will bear fruits later on. Do you not see that when a ruler wants to build a country, he gives its people seeds that suffice them for planting and food until they are able to harvest their coming fruits? All kinds of trees are so. You find on a tree many branches. If a tree remains isolated without having branches or shoots, people cannot cut anything of it, and if it is afflicted with a plague to perish, the species disappears without leaving a substitute.
O Mufaddal, consider the grains of pulses such as lentils, peas, beans, and the like. They grow in pods to be protected from plagues and harms until they gain in strength and hardness, just like the placenta that protects the fetus. The grains of wheat and other similar grains come out in hard shells, pointed sharply at their ends like spears to ward off birds and save the yield for farmers. If someone asks, "Don't birds have to eat from these wheaten grains?" it is answered, "Yes. Birds are creatures of Allah, and Allah has assigned them a share from the yields of the earth, but grains have been protected in this way so that the birds will not be able to eat and play with these grains whenever and however they like, which might cause terrible harms in these crops. If these grains were bare and not protected in this way, birds would pounce upon them and do away with them all. At the same time, birds would suffer indigestion, resulting in death, and farmers would lose much. Grains have been provided with these protective means to be kept safe, and birds cannot take from them except a little, while most of them remain for man who is worthier of them, because it is he who has judged it farms, and that which he needs is more than that which birds need. Consider the wisdom in creating the trees and the different kinds of plants. Since they always need nutriment like man and animals do, and since they have no mouths like the living beings, nor can they move to get their food, their roots have been made firmly planted into the earth to enable them to extract their food from the earth and carry it to the branches, leaves, and fruits on them, just as mothers suckle their children. Do you not see that the poles of tents are tied with ropes from every side so that they will remain erect and not fall down? Likewise, plants have roots extended into the earth in every direction to remain erect and fixed. Otherwise, how could long date palms and great trees withstand storms? See how the wisdom of the Creator has preceded the skill of people in fixing tents. People have taken their skills from the creation because trees have been created long before tents have been invented. Do you not see that the poles of tents have been taken from the trees? Thus, crafts have taken their skills from the ingenuities of the creation. O Mufaddal, consider the creation of the leaves of plants. You will see lines like veins spread throughout the leaf. Some of them are thick, extending in every side throughout the whole leaf, while some others are thin, extending between the thick ones and woven accurately. If leaves were made by man, the leaves of one tree would not be completed in a year, and many tools, actions, dealings, speech, and too much work would be required. In a few days of spring, huge numbers of plants and leaves grow that fill the mountains, the plains, and the lands of the earth. All of that is made without action or speech, but by the will, which is influential over everything, and by the obeyed command. Know, nevertheless, the principle underlying these fine capillaries. They are interwoven in the texture of the whole leaf to irrigate it and to transport water to every part of it, just as the veins spread in the body of man to carry nutriment to every part of it. The thick veins of the leaf have another job. They, with their solidity, hold together the leaf to prevent it from being torn. These leaves are similar to the leaves made by man from rags having sticks to hold them together. The craft of man imitates the creation of Allah, although it does not reach the actuality it imitates. Consider the pit and its importance. It has been placed inside the fruit in order to be like a nursery plant when the original plant is damaged or cannot be planted for any reason. Moreover, the pit, because of its solidity, keeps the flaccid and soft fruit tenacious, otherwise a fruit would break down and decay. Some kinds of pits are edible and some others give oils that are used in foods and other fields. Think now of that which you find on the pits of ripe dates and grapes. What is the reason behind that and why are they in this shape? Instead of that, there should be something inedible like that in the nebuk, the cypress, and the like. It is so that man may enjoy the delicious tastes of these fruits. Consider the other aspects of plants. You will find that they die once every year. The vital heat is enshrined in their twigs, and the materials for fruit are generated in them. Then, again, they come to life and grow to give you delicious kinds of fruits, so you serve different kinds of food. You find the branches of trees receiving you with their fruits as if they are presenting them to you by hand. You see flowers greeting you from atop their branches as if they are presenting to you their breaths. Who has planned all this? Surely it is He, the wise ordainer. And for what is all that? Surely it is to entertain man with these fruits and the lights of these flowers. How strange it is that instead of being grateful to these blessings, man denies the giver. Consider the pomegranate and the skill and ingenuity that lie in its creation. You see inside it what resembles hills of fat accumulated in its sides and seeds aligned so accurately as if they were arranged by hands. You see the seeds in groups, and each group is wrapped with screens fabricated uniquely and wonderfully, and all these are enveloped with the outer peel. The artistic ingenuity therein is that since the seeds alone cannot help each other in growing, that fat has been made between the seeds to supply them with food. Do you not see that the roots of the seeds are stuck into this fat? Then the seeds are wrapped with these screens to hold them together and to not be confused. After that, the seeds are fortified with a strong peel to enable them to stand against plagues. This is a little of the much there is in the description of the pomegranate. It has more than this, but we do not want to expatiate in speech. What we have mentioned to you is enough to ponder over. O Mufaddal, think about how the weak plants carry such heavy fruits like squash, cucumber, and melon, and what great wisdom there is behind such ordinance. When these plants are ordained to bear such heavy fruits, they are made to sleep on the ground. If they were erect like other trees and plants, they would not be able to bear such heavy fruits, and they would perish before their fruits ripened. See how these plants sprawl on the ground in order to place their heavy fruits on it to carry them instead of on these weak plants. You see gourd and melon sleeping on the ground and their fruits scattered around them like a sleeping cat with its kittens around it for suckling. See how these kinds of plants grow in the very hot season, and see how people long for their fruits and receive them gladly. If they were to grow in the winter time, people would refrain from them, besides that they would harm man's health. You may find some cucumbers in the winter, but people refrain from eating them except the gluttonous, who do not refrain from eating what harms them and diseases their stomachs. O Mufaddal, consider the date palms. Since there are females among this type of tree that need to be pollinated, male trees have been ordained to grow planting. A male palm tree is like a male animal that pollinates the female to bear, but it itself does not bear. Consider carefully the trunk of the date palm. You will find that it is woven from extended threads with other cross ones like the clothes that are woven by hands. It is so to be strong and hard enough to bear the heavy leaves and fruits, and to not break before violent storms, and to be firm enough for roofs, bridges, and other things. You will also find wood as a textile woven with lengthwise and cross parts like the parts of flesh. Nevertheless, it is so hard and tenacious that it is fit for making different tools and furniture. If it were hard like stone, it would not be fit to be used in roofing or other things where wood is used, like in the making of doors, beds, coffins, and the like. One of the great aspects of wood is that it floats in water. All people know this fact, but not all of them know its great importance. Without this aspect of wood, how could ships and vessels carry heavy cargoes and relieve people from the burden of carrying heavy goods from one country to another? It would cost people too much. Besides that, it would cause many goods needed by people to disappear from the markets, or it would be difficult for people to obtain them. Consider the herbs of drugs and the characteristics each one has. One penetrates into the joints to release thick wastes, some others deal with the humors of the body, some relieve of the wind, some treat tumors, and the like. Who then has endowed these plants with such powers, and who has made people realize the facts in them? Surely it is He who created them for this purpose. How could these facts come to man's mind by chance and accident, as some atheists say? Well, let us allow that man has learnt all these facts through his own intellect, reason, contemplation, and experimentation. Then how did the beast come to realize that, so that when a beast is afflicted with some illness or injury, it eats certain herbs and recovers? When some birds suffer from constipation, they get well by purgation with seawater, and there are too many other examples. You may doubt the utility of plants in the wild lands and deserts, where no human life exists, and think them meaningless and useless. Certainly not. Beasts feed on these plants, and birds feed on their seeds. Their twigs and wood are used as fuel by people. There are other benefits in these plants. They have some substances that are used as medicines, some for tanning hides, some with which to dye clothes, and various other benefits. Do you not know that one of the meanest kinds of plants is the papyrus? Yet it has many benefits. Paper is made from papyrus that rulers and the public need. Mats that are used by all classes of people are made from this plant. From papyrus, covers are made to keep different utensils. It is used as padding between fragile utensils and in baskets, so that they may not break, besides many other benefits. You should take a lesson from the different benefits in the little and big things Allah has created, and in those which have values, and in those which do not. The most worthless of all are the dungs and excreta, which are worthless and filthy, and yet they have an important role in agriculture. They are incomparable in their use for plants. No vegetable grows well except with dung and other fertilizers, which people find dirty and avoid being near. Know that the worth of a thing is not due to its material value. It has two different values in two different markets. Perhaps that which is mean in the commercial market may be precious in the market of knowledge. Do not belittle a thing just because it has little value. If chemists were to realize what there is in dung, they would buy it for the most expensive prices. Al-Mufaddal said, "It was then the time for the noon prayers. My master Imam Sadiq alayhi salam got up to prepare for the prayers and asked me to come to him early the next day. I left so happy because of what he had taught me, and I praised Allah for the great information I had received from him. I spent the night extremely delighted." Al-Mufaddal said, "On the fourth day I went to my master early in the morning. I was permitted to come in. He asked me to sit down, and I did. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, 'From us is praising, glorification, and sanctification to the oldest name, the greatest light, the exalted knower, the Lord of glory and honor, the creator of mankind, the annihilator of the worlds and ages, the keeper of the hidden secret, the forbidden unseen, the concealed name, and the hidden knowledge. His blessings be on the announcer of his revelation and the executor of his mission, he who was sent as a bringer of good tidings and a warner, and as a summoner unto Allah by his permission, and as a lamp that gives light, that he who would perish might perish by clear proof, and he who would live might live by clear proof. So on him and his progeny be good blessings and pure greetings, and on him and his progeny be peace, mercy, and blessings from the ancient times until forever, and they are well qualified for that, and they deserve it. O Mufaddal, I have explained to you the evidences of creation and the examples of the accurate plan ordinance in the creation of man, animals, plants, and other things that have clear lessons for him who takes lessons. Now, I will tell you about the plagues that occurred in some ages and which some ignorant people took as an excuse to deny the creation, the creator, and the intended ordinance. I shall tell you about the calamities and misfortunes, death and perishment that atheists and Manichaeans have denied, as well as those who have claimed that things came into existence by chance and accident. I shall refute them. May Allah destroy them for how they turn away from the truth. Some ignorant people have taken the plagues, such as epidemics, jaundices, hailstorms, and attacks of locusts, which occurred from time to time, as excuses to deny the Creator and the intentional ordinance in the creation. It is said in answering such people, "If there were no creator, then why would worse and more horrible events than these plagues not happen? For example, why wouldn't the sky fall on the ground, or the ground sink, or the sun not shine at all, or rivers and springs dry up until no water could ever be found, or the wind stop blowing until everything would decay and become corrupt, or seawater flow over the earth? Then why did these plagues, such as epidemics, locusts, and the like that we have mentioned, not last for such a long time that they would invade and devastate the entire world? In fact, they take place for some time and then soon disappear. Do you not see that the world is protected and safe from great, terrible events, that even if one of them were to take place for a long time, it might cause the destruction of the world? Thus, the world is kept safe through these simple plagues so that people may be disciplined and reform themselves and take lessons. Then, after not too long, when people feel desperate, these plagues disappear. Therefore, the occurrence of these plagues is as a warning, and their disappearance is as a mercy to the people." The Manichaeans say, If the world has a kind, merciful Creator, then why do these calamities and misfortunes take place? They say that the life of man in this world should be free from any trouble. We say, if it is so, man, out of ingratitude and haughtiness, will do everything that fits neither the religion nor this worldly life. Quite often you find that many people who have been nurtured in luxury and ease forget even that they are human, or they have a lord, or harm and misfortunes may afflict them, or they have to be merciful to the weak, help the poor, be kind to the miserable, and have pity for the weak and distressed. But when misfortunes afflict them and they taste their bitterness, they awake from their ignorance and indifference and turn back to that which they should have been doing. Those who deny these harmful matters are like children who hate bitter drugs, become angry when prevented from harmful foods, dislike disciplines and work, like to be free for amusement and idleness, and like to have anything to eat and drink. They do not know where idleness takes them. It takes them to a bad upbringing and bad habits. Harmful yet delicious foods cause them different illnesses and diseases. Disciplines bring them reform and goodness, and bitter drugs benefit them even if they are somewhat troublesome. If they ask, why has man not been made infallible against sins, so that he would not then need to be afflicted with misfortunes, it is answered, how would it be if man were not praised and rewarded for the good deeds he does? If they ask, what harm will it be to man if he is not rewarded for the good deeds he does as long as he enjoys pleasures and bliss, it is said to them, make an offer to a sound, reasonable man that he should sit idly and at ease and receive whatever he wants without any effort or work, and see whether he accepts this or not. You will find that he is more delighted with the little he receives out of his own efforts than the abundance he should receive undeservingly. So is the bliss of the hereafter. It is earned by man based on his own efforts and merits. The mercy bestowed on man in this aspect is too great. If he is rewarded for his deeds in this life and shown the way to get that deservingly through his own efforts, delight and happiness with what he receives will be perfected to him. If they ask, is it not possible that some people rely on the goodness they get even if they do not deserve it? Then what excuse is there in preventing one who wants to attain the bliss of the hereafter due to this argument? It is said to them, if this were permitted to people, they would get the utmost rabies. They would dare to commit all sins and vices and violate all forbidden limits. Who would refrain from sins or bear hardship in the way of virtues, and who would feel safe about himself, his family, and his properties from people if he did not fear the punishment of the hereafter? The harm of this matter would affect people in this life before the afterlife, and so justice and wisdom would be invalidated, and it would give an excuse to criticize the divine ordinance that it is not true, and it puts things in other than their suitable places. These persons may talk about the misfortunes that afflict all people, whether good or bad, or the ones that afflict good people while bad people remain safe from them. They ask, how is this possible in the wise ordinance of the wise ordainer, and what is the reason behind that? It is said to them, Allah has made these misfortunes which afflict both good and bad people as a reform for both kinds of people. That which afflicts good people increases the blessings of their Lord on them, and that makes them thank Allah and be patient, while that which afflicts bad people makes them stop their evil and refrain from sins and vices. These misfortunes also contain good for those who are not afflicted with them. As for the good people, they become delighted with the goodness and righteousness they are in, and become more willing to continue on their way. But as for the bad people, they realize the mercy and kindness of their Lord to them, and the safety they are in, though they do not deserve it. And this leads them to be kind to people, and forgive those who have done them wrong. One may say, these misfortunes afflict people through their properties, so what about those misfortunes that afflict their bodies and may cause them to perish, such as fire, drowning, flood, and earthquake? It is said, Allah has made goodness for both kinds of people in these calamities too. As for the good people, leaving this life relieves them from its obligations and saves them from its misfortunes. And as for the bad people, it clarifies their burdens and sins and prevents them from committing more sins. In short, Allah the Almighty, with His wisdom and power, has ordained all things toward goodness and advantageousness. Just like when a tree is broken down by the wind, and a good carpenter makes from it many useful tools, so does the wise ordainer. He turns the misfortunes that afflict people through their properties and bodies into goodness and benefit. If someone asks, why do these misfortunes happen to people, it is said to him, it is so lest people turn to sins because of the long peacefulness they live in, and that bad people exaggerate in committing sins and good people slacken in doing good. Both these matters prevail amongst people when they live at ease and in peace, while these events that afflict them deter them and make them turn back to their reasons. If they live free from such events, they will exaggerate in transgression and disobedience, just as the people of ancient ages did, until they deserve perishment through great floods and the earth was purified from them. From among what the atheists who deny planning and ordinance of creation criticize is death and extinction. They say that people should live forever in this life free from any plague and misfortune. It is necessary to carry the argument to its logical conclusion to see the consequences to which it leads. Consider that if all those who had entered this world and those who will enter it remained, and not a single one of them died, do you not think that this earth would become too narrow for them? They would not have enough room for their dwellings, farms, or the requirements of their living. People, although death always perishes them, compete over abodes and farms until wars break out between them and bloods are shed. Then, how would it be if they were born but did not die, in spite of their greed and hard-heartedness? If people become certain that they will not die, they will not be satisfied with anything they receive, and no one will give anything to anyone who asks him. No one will forget or overlook anything that has happened to him. Yet they will become wearied with this life and everything in it, just like one who lives long becomes wearied of his life and wishes he would die and be free from this world. If the atheists say, "It should have been ordained that the plagues and misfortunes would not afflict people, so that they would not wish for death or yearn for it," we have already described that it would take people towards transgressions and evils, which would make them corrupt in religion and life. If they say, "People should not reproduce so that dwellings and livings would not become narrow for them," it should be said to them, "Then most creatures would be prevented from entering this world and enjoying the blessings and gifts of Allah the Almighty in this life and the afterlife, if only one generation, who would not reproduce, were to enter this world." And if they say, "All people who had been created and who will be created until the last day of the world should be created in that one generation," it should be said to them, "We have already said that dwellings and livelihoods would not be enough. And if people did not reproduce, the pleasures felt through kin relationships, their support in misfortunes, and the pleasure and happiness of having and upbringing children would be missed." This proves that all the claims and imaginations of the atheists, other than that which has been ordained by the wise Creator, are wrong and nonsensical. A criticizer may criticize the divine ordinance from another point of view and say, "Is there ordinance in this world while we see that powerful persons oppress, transgress, and rape, the weak are wronged and humiliated, good people are poor and afflicted with distress, bad people are sound and wealthy, sinners and criminals are not punished immediately?" If there is in fact planned ordinance in the world, affairs should happen according to analogy. Good people should be blessed, bad people should be deprived, powerful people should be unable to wrong the weak, and sinners should be punished immediately. It is said in answering this, "If it were so, doing good, with which man has been preferred over other creatures, would disappear. People would not do good or benevolence expecting to be rewarded and trusting in what Allah has promised in return. People would be like animals that are led by whip and fodder. No one would act due to the certainty of being rewarded or punished until people would emerge from humanity into animality. What is not seen would not be known, and no one would act except for the pleasant pleasures of the worldly life. Even good people would act to earn livelihood and wealth in this worldly life only, and those who refrain from oppression and sins would do that just for fear of immediate punishment until all people's deeds would be done only for the present and with no certainty of what is with Allah, and they would not deserve the reward of the hereafter or the eternal bliss in it. Nevertheless, these things that the criticizer has mentioned, wealth and poverty, good health and affliction, are not contrary to his analogy, but they may happen according to that sometimes. You may find many good persons who are granted with wealth for certain wisdom, and less people think that is the atheists who are provided with the means of subsistence, while the pious are underprivileged and thence prefer debauchery to piety. And you find that many transgressors are punished when their transgressions and harms increase against people and against themselves, as with Pharaoh when he was punished with drowning, and Nebuchadnezzar was punished with getting lost, and Belbis with killing. Allah may delay the punishment of some evildoers and postpone the reward of some good doers till the afterlife for some reasons unknown to people. This does not refute the planned ordinance. Many rulers in the earth do this without annulling their ordinances. In fact, their delaying of what they delay and hastening of what they hasten are considered within their right of statesmanship and farsightedness. Since all evidences and their analogy necessitate that things have a wise creator, then what prevents this creator from managing his creation? According to their analogy, a maker does not neglect his craft except for one of three reasons: inability, ignorance, or evilness.
But all of these are impossible in the creation of Allah the Almighty, for an unable one cannot make such great wonderful creatures, an ignorant one does not know what is right and wise, and an evil one does not try to create and establish such things. If it is so, then definitely the creator of these creatures manages them, although much of this management cannot be understood by people. The public does not understand much of the management of rulers, nor do they know its reasons, because they do not know the secrets of the rulers, nor what is there in their minds. If the reason behind a certain management becomes known, it will be found as right and correct. If you have a doubt regarding some drug or food, and then it becomes clear to you in two ways or three that it is cold or hot, will you not judge that as if you have found and then remove the doubt from your mind? So what about these ignorants?
Why do they not judge that this world has been created and managed by a wise creator, and deny that it has been created in spite of all the evidences before them that cannot be counted? If half of the world and what it contained were somehow ambiguous, whether correct or not, it would not be a good thinking or courtesy to judge that all the world had been established out of indifference and by chance, because the other half would have accurate and perfect things that would refute such hasty, untrue opinions. How is it then that whenever one searches, he finds the utmost correctness and perfection, so that nothing may come to one's mind unless it is found most right and perfect? O Mufaddal, know that the name of the universe in Greek is cosmos, which means embellishment. It has been called so by philosophers and wise people too. They called it so when they saw its perfect order and organization. They did not call it order or organization, but called it embellishment, to show that, besides its exactness and perfection, it was the utmost in beauty and splendor. O Mufaddal, I wonder at those people who do not judge medicine to be faulty, though they see doctors commit mistakes, but they judge the world to be neglected, though they do not see anything neglected in it. I really wonder at the morals of those who claim to be wise, but ignore morals among people, and set their tongues free to abuse the exalted Creator, glory be to Him. The wonder is that the wretched Mani, when he pretends to have the knowledge of secrets while he is blind to the evidences of wisdom in the creation, and claims that the creation is full of mistakes and the Creator is ignorant. The oddest of all are the atheists who wanted to perceive by the senses what could not be perceived by reason, and when they failed, they denied the existence of the Creator and said, "Why is he not perceived by reason?" It is said, "He is above the position of reason, as is sight when it does not see that which is above its position. When you see a stone rising in the air, you know that someone has thrown it. This knowledge comes not from the sight, but out of reason, because it is reason that distinguishes and knows that a stone does not rise by itself. Do you not see how the eyesight stops at a point and does not exceed it? So does reason. It stops at a point in the cognizance of the Creator and does not exceed it, but it realizes His existence through reasoning. It is the same reason by which man realizes that there is a soul inside him, though he does not see or feel it by any of the senses. And according to this too, we say, reason perceives the Creator in a way that necessitates man to acknowledge His existence, and it does not perceive Him in a way that necessitates man to know His qualities. If they ask, how is a weak man charged with knowing the Creator without knowing His qualities? It is said to them, people have been charged with what they can do and within their abilities, that is, to believe in the Creator and follow His orders and prohibitions, and they have not been charged with knowing His attributes. A king does not ask his subjects to know whether he is tall or short, white or brown. Rather, he asks them to submit to his rule and follow his orders. Do you not think that if someone were to come to a king and say, present yourself to me so that I can know you fully, otherwise I will not follow your orders, he would expose himself to punishment? In the same way, he who refuses to believe in the Creator until he knows His essence will receive His wrath. And if they say, do we not describe Him when we say that He is the mighty, the wise, and the generous? It is said to them, these are attributes of acknowledgement and not of description. We know that He is wise, but we do not know the essence of His wisdom, and the same can be said about His other attributes. We see the heaven, but we do not know its essence, and we look at the sea, but we do not know where it ends. The examples of this cannot be counted, though they fail in comparison, but they lead the reason to know the Creator. If they ask, then why do people disagree over Him? It is said, because minds fail to recognize the extent of His greatness and exceed their capacities in searching to know Him, and they want to know everything about Him while they are unable to do that or even the least of it. One of these examples is the sun that shines all over the world and yet no one knows its reality. There are too many sayings about it, and philosophers have disagreed over how to describe it. Some of them say that it is a hollow star full of fire with a mouth agitating with flames. Some others say it is a cloud. Some say it is a glass mass that concentrates heat and then sends rays. Some say it is a fine, clear mass of congealed seawater. Others say it is many parts of fires gathered together. Some others say it is a fifth element separate from the four elements. Then they have disagreed over its shape. Some of them say it is like a flat page, others say it is like a ball. They have also disagreed on its size. Some say it is as big as the earth, some others say it is less, and some say it is much greater than a great island. People of geometry say it is 170 times bigger than the earth. The disagreement in the sayings about the sun shows that people cannot realize its reality. Minds are unable to realize the reality of the sun, which eyes clearly see and senses easily feel. Then how about what is beyond the senses and hidden from the minds? If they say, "Why is he hidden?" it is said to them, "He is not hidden with a means, as one who hides from people behind doors and walls. The meaning of our saying, 'He is hidden,' is that he is invisible to the eyes and minds because he is beyond the extent of the faculties of eyes and minds, like the case with the sun, which is a creation created by him and cannot be realized by eyes and minds. If they say, 'Why is he so greatly beyond that?' this is a wrong saying because it does not befit one who is the creator of everything, except to be different from everything and exalted over everything. Glory be to him, the Almighty. If they say, 'How is it possible that he is different from everything and exalted over everything?' it should be said to them that the truth about things can be known in four ways. First, to see whether that thing is existent or not. Second, to know what it is in its essence. Third, to know how it is and what is its description. And fourth, to know why and for what cause it is. There is nothing in this existence that man can know in the Creator as it is, except that he knows that he exists. If we say, 'How and what is he?' knowing his essence and all things about him is beyond the bounds of possibility. Or we say, 'For what is he?' it is not valid in the description of the Creator, because he, glory be to him, is the cause of everything, and nothing is a cause for him. The knowledge of man that he, the Creator, is existent does not necessitate that he know what and how he is, just as his knowledge that the soul is existent does not necessitate that he know what and how it is. The same can be said about other spiritual matters. If they say, 'Now you describe him due to the shortage of knowledge about him as if he is unknown,' it is said to them, 'It is so on the one hand, if the mind wants to know his essence and description, and on the other hand, he is closer than every close one when his existence is proved by satisfactory evidences. From one side, he is clear to everyone, and from another side, he is so mysterious that no one can realize him. So is reason. It is clear through its evidences, whereas it is hidden in its essence. The naturalists say that nature does nothing meaningless, nor does it leave anything incomplete, and claim that wisdom proves that. It is said to them, 'Who has given nature this wisdom then, and how does it not exceed the limits of anything, which is something that minds fail to learn even after long experiments?' If they prove wisdom and power to be of nature in doing such things, they will acknowledge what they have denied, because these are the attributes of the Creator. But if they deny this to be of nature, then this is the creation calling out that it is the wise Creator's. From the ancient nations, there were some people who denied the divine will and management in things, and claimed that things came into existence by accidents and chance. They took some signs which were unlike the usual, such as when one was born with a finger, less or more, or when one was born disfigured, as evidence showing that things were not under will and management, but by accidents as they happen. Aristotle refuted that by saying, "That which comes into being by accident and chance is something that comes one time due to certain factors in nature making something unusual and not like the natural matters that happen in one form continually and successively." Omofadlan. You see the different species of animals following a regular pattern and having identical shapes. For instance, a human infant, when born, has two hands, two legs, and five fingers or toes in each limb. But sometimes, as for one who is born unlike the usual, it is because of some reason in the womb or in the substance from which the infant grows, as it happens in some crafts when a skillful craftsman wants to be accurate in his craft, but some defect in the raw material or tools affects his production. Such a thing may happen to the children of animals for the reasons we have mentioned, that a child may be born with less or more or disfigured limbs, but most of them are born sound with no defect. The defects that happen in some things because of some shortage do not mean that all the things have come by accident with no maker. So are things in nature. The saying that things have come into existence by accident and chance is totally wrong and nonsensical. If they say, "Why does such a thing happen?" it is said to them, "To know that things are not created inevitably by nature, nor by something else, as some people say, but are created with will and management by a wise Creator, who has made nature run most of the time in certain routines and sometimes in variation because of some temporary causes, so it is concluded that nature is managed by the Creator and it needs his power to attain its purposes and complete its acts. Blessed be Allah, the best of creators." O Mufaddal, Take what I have given you, and keep what I have presented you, and be to your Lord grateful, and to his blessings a praiser, and to his guardians an obeyer. I have explained to you a part from the whole, and a little from plenty of evidences of creation, and proofs of the right management and ordinance. Think of them deeply, and take a lesson." Al-Mufaddal said, "My master, with your assistance, I acknowledge that, and will inform of it, inshallah." He put his hand on my chest and said, "Keep it by the will of Allah, and do not forget, inshallah." I fainted to the ground, and when I regained consciousness, he said to me, "How do you see yourself, Mufaddal?" I said, "By the help and assistance of my master, I am not in need of the book that I have written, and the knowledge is before me as if I am reading it from my palm. Praise and thanks be to my master as he deserves." He said, "O Mufaddal, make your heart attentive and prepare your attention, mind, and tranquility, for I shall deliver to you from the knowledge of the heavens and the earth, and what Allah has created in them and between them of his wonderful creatures, and all kinds of angels and their ranks and positions, up until the farthest lote tree, and of the rest of the creation from the jinn and human beings to the lowest seventh earth, and what there is under the soil, so that what you perceive shall be a part of many parts. You may leave if you want with the mercy and blessings of Allah. You are to us in an honorable place, and your position in the hearts of the believers is as the position of water to the thirsty. Do not ask me about what I have promised you until I myself tell you." Al-Mufaddal said, "I left my master with that which no one had ever been left with."